This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
On this day to assess unemployment, one woman opts for lower hourly pay.
Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune into Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. I'll have the global perspective on business and economics in a moment. But first, in about an hour and a half, the official measure of America's jobs market will come out. If you aggregate the forecasts, the collective guess is the government will announce that payrolls are up by a good but not stellar 196,000 people, with the separate unemployment rate holding steady at 7%. We'll see. Earlier this week, there was a hint from an industry survey that in the private sector, construction jobs will be up for December. A sector where job creation has been lagging amid tight government budgets is the public sector. But economist Mark Zandi of Moody's Analytics says that might be changing.
Government employment is stabilizing in large part because state and local government employment is increasing. So in the next few months, I don't think government's going to be subtracting, at least on net, federal, state, and local, from the top line employment numbers.
Now, we regularly check in with people at the sharp end of the labor market. Last summer, we met Lisa Darcy, who lives in Florida's Tampa Bay area. 5 months later, we still find her stuck juggling more than one job. She's also decided to make a risky trade-off when it comes to her hourly wage. Hello, Lisa.
Hello again, David.
So where are you working?
Well, I have two jobs currently. I'm working in the mall management office of a retail mall, and I also work in a very large theater complex in Tampa.
Theater like movies or
no theater
drama?
Like live theater.
Live theater.
Mm-hmm.
So not a movie house. Now, this is your background, and you were working there when last we spoke, but you opted, what, to take a pay cut?
Yes, I actually had to make a strategic decision to switch departments. And in order to do so, I had to take an 18% hourly wage cut. And I did that for several reasons. One is that I get a lot more reliable hours and a more reliable schedule now than I did before. And the second reason is that I am learning a software program that really is ubiquitous in the industry. And I find that it'll make me more, or I believe it will make me more marketable.
So it's an hourly pay cut, but when you add up the extra hours at the lower rate, do you still end up ahead?
I hope so. When the season is over, to look back and say that was a good choice.
How about your chances for being able to just work a single job and focus your energy? You're not close to that yet?
No, I don't find any hope of that right now. I know a few people who just got full-time jobs, and they're all so far below the pay rate of where I would need to be that I can't see myself doing that in Tampa Bay.
Now, the government says the job market is getting better in America. You feeling that down there as you talk to people, as you meet with your friends?
I think it's a relative term. I was actually listening to some hopeful signs the other day, and I found myself getting very excited about the idea, but I'm not necessarily seeing it on the ground here. It was a bad retail season at the mall that I work at, I know, and the discussions were that it was pretty much company-wide, that people struggled this season, and I think that's going to continue for a little while longer.
Lisa Darcy is, well, let's not say your age. You're not as old as the President of the United States by several years. Is that okay? Can I say that?
I like
that. All right. Lisa Darcy lives in Tampa Bay, Florida. Thank you very much.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Now let's check the stock numbers. The FT 100 in London is up about 0.9%. Stock index futures in the U.S. are up at the moment. There's news this morning that China became the world's biggest trader in goods for the first time last year, overtaking the U.S. for all of 2013 and finishing the year with record trade figures in December. An unusual story about fundraising and animal rights out of Namibia and Texas to watch tomorrow. The Safari Club of Dallas, Texas, wants to auction off the right to shoot an endangered black rhinoceros. Their stated reason?
To raise funds for conservation, really.
The BBC's Matt Davies spent years covering sub-Saharan Africa.
The Dallas Safari Club say that they want to auction off this license to hunt just one black rhino that is in Namibia in southwest Africa. Now, there's an estimated 4,000 black rhinos in the wild. There are about 1,800 in Namibia. The supporters of this say that the money raised from this auction, which they think might be $1 million, will go towards conserving the rest of the black rhinos. So it's almost like a sacrifice.
All right, so some kind of trade-off is the idea here. The life of one rhino with the proceeds going to help the rest of the population. What's been the reaction?
Well, the people who are opposed to this say that this is somewhat barbaric. But then there are others, like a chap called Jeff Flocken from the International Fund for Animal Welfare. And he says, you don't need to do this. African countries should be doing non-hunting ecotourism, like photo safaris, taking photographs of rhinoceroses rather than shooting them. And he points to the example of Botswana. Now, in Botswana, they banned hunting permits last year. They did this because ecotourism makes up a 12% slice of their GDP. Hunting actually contributed far less than that, so they get more money out of people taking photos than shooting them. So they just decided to ban hunting. Namibia, of course, isn't going quite the same way because they are auctioning off this license through the Dallas Safari Club.
And while there are protests, the plan is for the auction to go ahead tomorrow. The BBC's Matt Davies, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
And some new ammunition for those who fret that technology is dumbing us down. Researchers at Stony Brook on New York's Long Island have come up with an algorithm that scans the text of books and has a good shot at predicting which manuscripts have the higher chances of commercial success. Guess what? The blander and simpler the style of writing, the greater the chances it'll get read. Toni Morrison, Mr. Ondaatje, and Mr. Borges, beware. Researchers looked at linguistic style and the rate that readers downloaded books on the free site Project Gutenberg. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.